Please do.
Thank you.
Hi there. I'm Mary Thier. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Mary.
We'll see what happens. There's no oxygen up here in the brain. So I was asked to speak, and I said, I got to go lay down first for a minute. Anyway, and we're all out of water, so we'll see what happens, right? So this is about the second step. I don't know. Can I move this?
You can.
Thanks. Yep. Appreciate it.
Second step.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the second step in my journey in recovery, I have found a different way of looking and applying this in my life. I wasn't raised with any religion, so I don't have that where I associated a power greater than myself with church. So I think in some way I was blessed not to have that. But at the same time, I didn't feel like I was worthy for some kind of God in what I knew of it. My experience was is that I had a situation occur about 3 years before I got into recovery with my daughter that where I brought her over a period of about 9 months to three different specialists, and nothing was working. And I remember I had to stay out of work for about 3 or 4 days, and when I went back to work, one of my bosses said to me, how's Candace? And I broke down, and I started to cry, and I said, I've done everything. And it just so happened, this is just the way it went. He had a brother-in-law that ran a ministry, and it was called the Invisible Ministry. It was in La Jolla, I believe. And you didn't have to go to church there, but he helped a lot of people. And he said, maybe you could call him. Well, you know, I thought it was a little odd because I had had an affair with this guy, you know, but he's telling me to call some minister. But anyway, when you run out of everything, you kind of surrender. And so I called this man, and he told me his name, and he said, our religion is based on Emmett Fox. And I didn't know who Emmett Fox was or anything. And make a long story short, my daughter, after 3 weeks, had nothing the matter with her. So I knew there was a God. I knew it was her God, but I knew there was a God. I was 3 years in recovery when I went to a long-timer meeting in Pasadena, and there was one of the original 100 drunks that talked. It said that before the big book was written, they used Emmett Fox's works. And I went, oh my gosh, wow, no wonder. So I really feel as though there is a power that deals with drunks and kids. And we don't even know what's happening sometimes. So when I came into the halls, I knew there was a God. And I came to believe in a God here in, and I think that's what the step says. And say, what do you believe? But what have you come to believe in? What have you come to believe in? And the first thing that happened for me is that I knew there was something going on because I could see it with you. That was what I came to believe in. I saw something in you. And as the years have gone on, I think I was around 20 years in recovery when I realized that I knew there was a God, and I knew it was there, and I knew I had experienced a lot of things. But it wasn't personalized to me. It was almost intellectual. And I tell you that because I have run into a lot of people. It's funny, the first 20 years and now almost the second 20 years, I'm doing something different. And my God and my understanding, what I've come to believe in, I actually found right off of Bill's story. In Bill's story, he talks about he found a newfound friend. And I remember reading that one time and sitting there and saying to myself, do I think of my God as a friend? And I pondered that and pondered it. And a lot of you people have heard my story, but the truth is that I have a best friend. I have a couple of best friends that I've known since I've been 6 years old. And one who happens to have God, I think she's got 34 years this year. And I sponsored her the whole time. I went to her house whenever my folks were away. She was like a sister. She's truly a best friend. So that if she walked into this room right now, I could take a look at her and she could take a look at me and we'd go, we don't have to speak. There's an energy. And what was the energy? The energy is this. It's safe. Now, I tell you that because I'm a woman, and I'm an alcoholic, and I'm a mother, and I was a wife that was battered, and battered pretty severely, a weekend guest with the local police. And so what I want to say is that for me to make a decision or, you know, to turn my will and my life, my thoughts and my actions over to some power, I would tell you I'm going to do that. I ain't going to do that one. Boy, you're not going to hurt me. I was hurt. I was damaged a lot, and I didn't really feel safe. I felt safe with my sponsors. My sponsors had an energy about them that I could tell them anything. My best friend, I could. But I had never considered to have a God, a loving God as he expresses himself, which I was seeing the expression in my life personally. And I remember when I pondered that, I was going through one of those trials and tribulations. You know, it says in our book something in effect, if we fail to enlarge on our spiritual life, we will not be able to face the certain trials and low spots ahead. Certain. Doesn't say maybe you're going to have a bump in the road. It says certainly you are. And if you don't have a God that does business with you and you can do business with that God, I'm here to tell you I've experienced watching some people not be able to get through that. So I have not arrived anywhere. In fact, I consider myself a seasoned beginner. And through the years, and my conception means it continues to grow. Concept, you've already got it, and it's not growing anymore. We found that in the book study one time. It says conception, not concept. We kept saying, what's the difference? And we looked it up. So I really believe that a power greater than myself, I come to believe in, that's a friend. And because of that, I've been restored to sanity, which is sound thinking and balance in any area of my life that I have finally admitted that I am powerless over to my innermost self, that I have no power and my life's unmanageable. If I just say, yeah, I'm powerless over that, and I really don't admit it to my innermost self, there is no way that power will enter. It's a very strange thing. I found that for myself that it wasn't until I admitted to my innermost self that I was selfish. I heard the words, I read the words, I saw selfish self-centeredness was the root of my problem. But if I hadn't admitted to my innermost self, there's no way there was a power greater than myself that could come in. And this power for me is a friend. And I don't know how much time. Do I have any time left? What have I got?
2 minutes.
2 minutes, oh good. I hope I've made some sense. One of the best promises here in the book, and I love this promise. It says, when I draw closer to my best friend, when I draw closer to my best friend, he's going to reveal himself to me. That's on page 57. The big book has 58 pages plus the doctor's opinion that deals with steps 1 and 2. If you count in the big book, the rest of the pages that deal with step 3, step 4, step 5, they don't add up to 59 pages. They really don't. So there's an awful lot in these first 2 steps. If you do not have a power that you can do business with, that does business with you, that's your best friend, and you have the quality of safety with that, I don't think you're going to do it. Now, that's my experience with the people I sponsor. They have to tell me where they feel safe. Where do they feel safe? What's the energy around it? My power greater than myself grew from the cat that I had, E.T., who was very safe, that was always with me. She was always present even when I didn't want her. She lived 20 years. There was an energy that came off of that. I'm here to tell you, my power greater than myself is much, much more vast than that cat. But you start where you are. Humility is to accept where you are right now. Thank you, and God bless.
Thank you.
Because it's a little warm up here, could I actually have somebody in the back row bring us, the speakers, all some water? I'd really appreciate that. Next we have Donna D. Donna's home group is Thursday. All are welcome from Aurora, Colorado. She is Al-Anon Family Group. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Donna, and I'm very nervous. I am so grateful to be here up at FOTS. I'm actually glad that it came a month early this year. I didn't want to have to wait a whole year to come back. And thank you, Brenda, for asking me to speak. I thought I listened during the second meeting, or the first step panel, and I thought about the whole step and the sanity and the insanity. And I'll start in the beginning. I came into Al-Anon, it was the end of February, so I missed our second step study. And I didn't hear about it for quite a long time. But we always read the steps at the beginning of the meeting, and I never liked the second step. I didn't like the word insanity. I'm like, okay, I don't belong here. I am not insane. And like many have shared, it took me a good 6 months to... I finally heard, as everybody has, or most of us have now, the Einstein definition of insanity about doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. The first time I heard that in a meeting, I knew I belonged. And I said, okay, yeah, that is me. And even as I was driving up the mountain, one of the things that I used to do over and over again, I was committing to something and getting out of commitments. And I even asked a friend in the car, I said, hey, so are you going to be speaking on any of the panels? And she said, no, she was doing some other service work here. And I said, do you want to? And she goes, well, I wasn't asked. And I go, well, I could ask you. And I would find some way to get out of it. And sitting through there thinking about this step, I wouldn't be up here right now if it wasn't for a power greater than myself. And it took me a long time, much like Mary mentioned, about feeling worthy. I didn't grow up in any formal religion or anything. And I really, by the time I came into these rooms, thought that I'd done a lot of not so good things that I'd heard that I felt I wasn't worthy. My father would tell me I wasn't worthy. My husband would tell me I wasn't worthy. But worst of all, I would tell myself I was not worthy of a power greater than myself, helping me and taking care of me and loving me. And I heard in the rooms about let the group be your higher power if you have no concept. And I didn't really understand that, but I saw these people believed in a power greater than themselves. And I believed that they believed that. And I saw them going through things I felt were much more difficult than I had ever had to deal with regards to alcoholism. And they were happy. They were restored. They were human. They would cry. They would laugh. And I learned to do that. I came into these rooms numb. I was cried out. I was laughed out. I was just numb. And I heard later the next year around when we talked about the second step, where they break down the second step into came to, and then came to believe. And I believe that. I came to the meetings. It took me a while to come to and wake up and get a sponsor and start working the steps. And then I came to believe that I was loved. I was loved by every one of you out there that didn't even know me. And I'm so grateful for that. And I am getting restored to sanity because I will go into those things I used to do over and over again and expecting different results. And people would try, they would offer, share their experience about things that they tried differently, that I was going through, that might be a better way to react to the disease of alcoholism. And I would reluctantly try it, and I was amazed at the results. And I didn't expect certain results. I just tried it, and it was powerful, and I knew it wasn't me. I knew it was a higher power helping me. I am trying to stay focused on the second step, but I am slowly but surely getting restored. Coming to this conference is the most powerful spiritual part of my recovery, because there's so much shared here that I don't always hear in the meetings about the spiritual recovery, the spiritual side of our program. And I was grateful a speaker mentioned earlier about this emotionally sober. That's powerful for me. It was when I had probably been in Al-Anon, I think, I'm sure I'll get corrected later. I think it was about a year or so. I started doing a big book study with another Al-Anon friend of mine, and it amazed me. It opened up so much understanding in my journey, as far as I saw no difference. I read those stories. I thought I was an alcoholic for a little bit. You know, I go, maybe I am an alcoholic because I do this and this and this. I'm self-centered. I obsess. But my obsession is not over alcohol. And she cleared that up for me. And that is really the only difference that I have found between Al-Anon and alcoholics, is what our obsession is over. And I am no longer obsessed with the alcoholics in my life and what they're doing. I sometimes change my obsession, but it's to healthier obsessions, such as my recovery and things related to this program. And I get obsessed about coming to this conference every year and everything. And so, you know, it's at least about healthier obsessions. I've been able to have healthier relationships with my husband, my family, my friends, that I could never have done without everyone in these rooms, without the knowledge in the big book. Bill's story especially, she already quoted what I was thinking about. And as one of the things I do over and over again, but I wasn't expecting different results, I left all my notes and my big book and everything over on a chair over there with my purse. And so I don't have them in front of me. But without a power greater than myself, if I didn't believe it, I couldn't stand up here right now. I have never talked to this many people at one time in my life, and I couldn't have done it without your love, your program, your patience, and everything else. So thank you very much.
Next on the second step, we'll have Catherine D. from the Sherwood Group in San Angelo, Texas. Welcome.
Hello, everyone. I'm Catherine, and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Catherine.
I'm very grateful to be here, very excited about this. So staying on topic of the second step, I was thinking about where I was before I found this beautiful program. And I was living definitely in alcoholic insanity. I didn't believe that I had a problem. I was my own power. I had made a decision that there was no God. I was so alone. I was so desperate. and I was in the darkness, and I could not see outside of myself. So for me, if there was a God, he didn't care about me anymore. What I didn't realize, that it was of my own creating. So when I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was not doing it for myself. I was doing it for my husband and my children and my family, thinking, I don't have a problem. These people are crazy, even though I thought, maybe, just maybe. And I sat there, and I did not realize that I was going to walk into a room full of living, breathing, walking miracles. It was a moment for me that I can't explain, but at that moment I thought, there's got to be something greater in this room. But I still had a difficult time coming to believe that there was a power greater than myself. I grew up in a religion as a child where God had strict boundaries, and if I didn't do what God wanted me to do, I was going to burn. And it was scary. I was scared, very scared of God and scared of what he thought of me. And when I started working with my sponsor that I have now, I learned that this power can be something that I understand. And that opened a big door for me, to believe in something greater than myself that loved me. Because I didn't love myself. This power showed me a way of life through AA, through the people in AA. I am so blessed to be here talking to you all right now, and I realize that because of this power, I'm standing right here. I'm alive, and I'm breathing. I don't really have much more to say than that. I kind of drew a blank. I had all these things I was thinking about. But really, that's all I have. And I'm just really blessed to be here. And thank you all. And I do love you all very, very much.
Next, we have Aaron M. from AA, the Primary Purpose Group in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Thank you.
My name's Aaron. I'm an alcoholic. I was the person that had once had faith and lost it. My first time, and you know, I grew up, I didn't really have a problem with God. Wasn't really particularly religious. And, you know, I hit AA at 20 years old. And, you know, because I was unwilling to do some work, Went to a lot of meetings, hung out with a lot of people in AA, and that was about the extent of it. 8 months of that, and that was enough, and I was back out. And, you know, I got married, and as my drinking progressed, it really started causing some troubles in my marriage. And I prayed to God a lot, you know, mostly that he would just make it easy, because... Like I said, I wasn't willing to do a lot of work. So I would pray and pray, and I went to church, and a grandfather was very spiritual, and went to church with him, and, you know, when nothing got better and my drinking got worse, I said, I had about enough of this. This is fooey, and this is not for me. So it fueled. The longer I was out, the worse I got, the more that resentment towards God grew, you know, and much like Catherine, you know, at some point I think I decided that he had pretty much looked into my soul and saw my wretched soul and the wickedness of the way I was living and wanted nothing to do with me. So, you know, I continued on, and I used that to pretty much as an indictment of the whole. Anybody that was believed in God and that was not living life perfectly was a hypocrite. And so 15 years later, after the first time, when I ended up back in treatment, you know, I called, they said, this is a 12-step program, and I'd already done AA, and I certainly wasn't believing in God, so, yep, I gotcha. Like, I had a plan, and, you know, figured I'd go to treatment and get some more therapy, because the 5 years of therapy I had was working so well, you know, that, like, I just needed to cram it all into 30 days. That was probably it. And, you know, really where I got that willingness was, you know, once I got straightened out and got everything out of my system, you know, it was that point of decision, you know, that gets talked about at the bottom of page 25, you know, really, as I saw it, I was down to two options, you know, one to keep going. And the other to accept spiritual help. We were sitting there, and I wasn't in treatment very long, and they had a step study meeting there, and they were reading out of the 12 and 12, and when they read about the fellow that had lost faith and then had once had faith and lost it, you know, that pretty well described me. And then I went into this internal dialogue, you know, pretty much, haven't you had enough? What is it going to hurt? You know, just do whatever these people say. And, you know, it was from there, you know, and it was good that, you know, the only thing that I needed was a willingness at that point. You know, I did not have to accept any religious figure as my personal savior that day. You know, I just had to have, you know, a willingness, you know, and like it talks about, and we agnostics, like, I could not comprehend or understand God, you know. I was willing to try. I was willing to go back to my cabin that night and pray to a God that, you know, I was pretty uncertain about that God's existence. You know, and, you know, the promise of a return to sanity. And, like, you know, at that time, I'm not sure that existed either. You know, I didn't want to, I couldn't live the way I was living anymore. I just wanted no more of that, you know. I knew I just didn't want that anymore, you know. when I was in there, my counselor said, you know, I want your recovery to be like, I want it to be like the best drug you ever did. You know, I want to blow your hair back. And I was like, this guy is crazy. Like, you know, hopefully I can stay sober. Hopefully I make it, you know. Hopefully I stop neglecting my wife, you know. But this what this guy is talking about is, you know, not possible, you know. And really, you know, it was a ways down the road, you know, before I started getting into steps 9 and getting those amends done and 10 and 11 and before I really got to experience God and really got to, you know, experience that return to sanity, you know, at least as far as alcohol is concerned. it comes and goes. you know, usually I get up and I talk and I can't stop talking, and now I'm looking down and there's still some time left and reaching, hoping something comes to mind. You know, nothing's coming to mind. You know, as I got further, as I progressed, I realized the importance of that second step. You know, all the foundation of what I have, reliance upon God, you know, seeking God in every area of my life today, all came from that willingness to believe, you know. But I, you know, I wish I could just say I had a change of heart and that I decided to try something different, but it wasn't, you know. It really was, man. This is, I don't know what the hell I'm going to do if this doesn't work. I have no idea, you know. So, you know, given that perspective, you know, that willingness was a little bit easier to come by. And you know, fortunately, the guys that I've worked with, they haven't had a problem with God. I'm pretty new at this still, only had a couple of guys. But, you know, that's something I haven't had to address with them, is going through step two. And, you know, just are you willing or are you not? I don't know what to say. Yeah, if I talk any longer, it's just going to be rambling nonsense. So I'll be quiet now. Thanks.
Now I'll open the mic. Please share on your experience on step two. Thanks.
Hello, everyone. My name is Tony Blankenship, and I'm an alcoholic. It's really nice to be here. I haven't been here. I was here the first year that we had it at Copper Mountain, and I haven't been back since because I'm busy. And a couple things that came to really struck me is that I came in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous as I was, first time I was 15, but I didn't really want to get sober. At 19, I wanted to get sober because I had two DUIs. And, you know, alcohol was a problem. And I came in and out of AA for 6 years, and I looked at the steps, and I worked every one of them in my head, and I would not do the God thing. I just wouldn't do it. I'd come here, and they'd be like, you got to find a higher power, and I'm like, that's good for you. And I just wouldn't do it. I don't know why. I don't know what I was so scared of. And then, you know, the day came where I just could not drink, and I quit stopping. And when I got separated from alcohol and got brought to Alcoholics Anonymous this time, I knew it wasn't going to work. I was like, this ain't going to work. I'm not going to be able to stay sober. I might make it 30 days because I'm locked up, but that's it. And I'm leaving. And there were people around me like, I'm done. And I'm like, I'm not. Because I knew I wasn't, because I drank again all the time. And I got a sponsor, and he suggested this novel concept. He says, why don't you start praying on your knees in the morning and at night? And I was like, yeah, but he said, Tony, just shut up and do it. And I was like, okay. And what became real apparent to me is it didn't matter what I believed at that point. It didn't matter what I thought. It didn't matter what any of those things. It just mattered that I did something. And I got on my knee. I had to pray out loud for a long time because my head would scream so loud about how stupid it was and how lame I was and how, you know, blah, 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 blah. And is that for me?
No.
Am I done? Oh, okay. All right, you're done. Okay. I mean, I can take a message. And it worked, man. It really worked. It really worked. I got sober in 1998. I'm 14 and a half years sober. I'm almost 15. And here's, you know, like, so here's where I'm at today. I think faith is my decision. And I, you know, the deal is for me, I'm just not all in. You know, I've been restored to sanity with alcohol, but like, I'm just not all in, and I'll be like, yeah, I'm sure, yeah, I believe, and I'm like, yeah, but it's like, not really, you know, not really, because I'm not doing it, right? I mean, I'm not really, like, I don't think I'm crazy, is like the deal. I think I'm okay. I think, like, all these things that are unmanageable at 14, you know, Mickey said that in the first step, it's like, I have all these bedevilments going on, and some are bigger, and some are smaller, and some are, you know, like, whatever, but they're going on. They haven't stopped. You know, because I'm living a spiritual life. And, you know, and once in a while, about every day, I'll try to manage one of those bedevilments. And I'll be like, I don't need God for that. I'm good. And I'll talk to my sponsor. I'm like, yeah, but I'm doing it. And he's like, no, you're not. You're not invested. And it's a reminder to me is that faith is my decision. That's up to me. It's my decision. That's not God's job. That's my job. It's my job to have faith. And, I'm just grateful to be here. I feel good. It's nice to be here, and it's nice to see everybody. So, thanks.
Couldn't believe Tony beat me over there. My name's Tom. I'm an alcoholic.
Sober by the grace of God. Been continuously sober since June the 15th of 1986. And my home group is an AA group in Santa Fe, New Mexico. We used to introduce ourselves like that when we got up here. This is my home conference. A lot of extremely good friends in this room, and I owe them the truth, you know. Brian P. spoke at our home group about 6 months ago, and he displayed a lot of courage, and I hope I can be that courageous. You know, I got sober in Albuquerque in a treatment center where I don't remember anything that happened there other than an AA meeting came in, and I glommed onto these two guys, and the one guy told me, he says, you need to find a higher power that you can do business with. And up until that point, I didn't believe in anything anymore. I had, but I didn't anymore. And I asked him how he stayed sober. He said, I pray every day. I ask God to keep me sober, and I thank God at night. And I started doing that because that was the only flimsy reed I had left. And amazingly, I stayed sober for 33 days in that place. And my personal best was 8 days in 16 years. And so I knew there was some difference. And so just, I guess, out of superstition or whatever, I kept doing that. And I did it for many, many years. And then I stopped doing that because I understood I was trying to make a deal with God and that you don't need to deal with God. I've got nothing to deal with. You know, I don't have any card to offer God. So I stopped doing that. And that's a whole other story. So, try to quicken this. Years ago, I used to participate in Lakota Way or the Sweat Lodge, and I was carrying the hot rocks. I was the fireman, and having a real hard time with it. It was winter time. It was slippery, and I'm carrying this hot stuff, and I've got a bad hip, and I'm praying the whole time, God, please give me the power. Please give me the power. Please give me the power. If you drop one of these rocks, you have to go back and pick it up and put it back in the fire, and it's just hard. And I'm praying this prayer, and a voice said to me, I gave you the power, now use it. And that was it. And so I shut up with the prayers, and I just did my job, you know. And so anyway, over the years, this will just amaze you, I'm sure, but I've had a real problem with gambling, casino gambling. Specifically slot machines. I've been fighting this probably most of my sobriety. This is what you can expect at 27 years, by the way, just to give you a little hope. the spell was broken at one point through prayer, and I thought it was over with, and I just slid back into it. And I tried to play it down, and I tried to pretend like it was spiritually okay, and I speak at conferences, and I stand at the podium, and I go on, and I know that I've got this secret that I'm not telling anybody, that what? Well, I love you too. That's why I'm telling you this. And then I'm lying to my wife. I'm not lying to her, but I'm phrasing things in such a way that I don't tell the truth. That's lying, right? I'm being dishonest to my wife, and that's not good for a relationship, guys. It really isn't. And some people have heard this story, but most of you haven't. Anyway, and I'm praying the whole time, God, please give me the power not to go into these casinos. God, please give me the power not to go into these casinos. Please give me the power not to go, over and over and over. And I'll be praying it as I walk into the casino, okay? And my rationale is I'm not bankrupting us, so it's really not that bad. And, you know, there's no work right now anyway. And, you know, maybe God wants me to hit the big one, you know? That could be possible, right? I mean, and I even tell my sponsor, and I'm even fist-stepping it with people and telling guys that I sponsor about it, and my sponsor says, you need to go to Gamblers Anonymous. I don't want to go to Gamblers Anonymous. I don't say that to him. I say, well, I'll look into that, you know? But I don't want to, for reasons of pride, and how many more programs can I do? So I'm going on like this. Then I start saying, thy will be done, as I walk into the casino. And what happened, guys, is if I had the thought of going in, I'm in. I mean, it had me. I mean, it absolutely did. So now, because I'm being dishonest with my wife, I can't do nightly review anymore, because who wants to look at being dishonest? Every night you check that off. Yeah, I lied. I was dishonest. So I just stopped doing that, okay? And, you know, I had I vaguely sensed I was not being any too smart. You know what I mean? Remember that? Anyway, what happened was one day I sat in meditation, and I remembered that time when I was picking up those rocks, and I heard the voice say, use the power I've given you, okay? And so what I did was, instead of this, please help me, I made a covenant with God, and I said, God, today I promise I won't go in there. And I didn't. It was like the spell was broken. And every day I said the same prayer, God, today I promise I won't go in there. And I haven't been in since. It's been about 3 or 4 months now. And the idea is that I'd rather beg for power that I already have than use the power that's been given. How many prayers do I have to say before the prayer is answered? Probably one. But I'd rather beg for it than use it. You know, I was thinking about Mark Houston, and he said this thing that really got me one time. He said, I was praying and asking God to show me. I said, God, please show me how to tell people about you. And what I heard was, don't tell them about me. Tell them about your experience of me. Okay? Don used to say, you know, the big book doesn't say belief in God. It says belief in the power of God. And that's what we get here. Thanks.
Hi, I'm John, a member of Al-Anon. I had to say about one thing. It took me a long time, like years, to figure this out. So in case somebody else is like as thick as I was about this, I will simply say that religion and God are two separate and distinct things. A religion may say that they are the only one and that's the only way you can talk to God, but they all say that. And in any denomination, you can find someone who is very spiritual and connected and can very help you, and you can find the evilest people on the planet in that same religion. It doesn't matter. And as far as religious texts go, you can find some wonderful, inspirational things in some of those religious texts, and you can find the ugliest, nastiest thing that will drag you down to whatever pit there is in the same texts. So it took me a long time to figure out, in a way, that I'd been sold a bill of goods when I was growing up, because this is the only way to work. Well, I tried them, and it didn't work. So God doesn't love me. No, it's they can't help you. It's that religion gives God a bad name. Religion is a man-made thing. God didn't make it. I'm sure if we ran across him today, what are you guys doing? What's all this stuff that you say is in my name and it really isn't? I don't know. So I've had to really work on breaking that away. When somebody says, this is what was written and this is from God, it's like, well, no, it's from somebody who was spiritual at the time, whatever time that was. People found it really valuable. Maybe there's something in there. But I might read something from God in the big book. Or I might read something from God in some of the Al-Anon literature I have. I think probably I have not really been to church. I have been in a building that was built around a religion. But I really didn't go to church until I actually went to an AA meeting. And thought, now these people are really in with God. So that's what I had to figure out. I hope that helps somebody. Thanks.
Hi, my name's Jim. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, Jim. Greetings from Iowa. I've never really considered myself a control freak, more of a control enthusiast. One of the things that I fall prey to is my ego will kind of squirrel up through into my brain to help me forget one of the pertinent ideas that no human power can free me from alcoholism. And I had a situation here recently where I had to do business, as has been said. I have many experiences. One thing that Tom said reminded me what I did wrong in this program for a long time was to try and understand so I could explain God to someone else. And what's happened with me today is that I'm able to experience and express God and my experience through my experience. And it's a wonderful place to be. I have found whenever I surrender another part of my life to God, my world gets a lot bigger. When I'm trying to figure it all out, it gets smaller. And, excuse me, as people are familiar with the mountains, the view from the valley is significantly different than the view from the mountaintop. And so I have some medical issues, and I have a foot that won't behave itself, so they want to take part of it, and I'm coming off a shoulder injury. And so we're trying to time this thing. And I'm not second step stuff is I got to figure this out, okay? I got to know what it's going to look like. So all of this stuff's going along and coming off the shoulder surgery, and I'm sitting in church, and it kind of was like the scene in The Wizard of Oz where the house is spinning around, and, you know, and all those scenes are going by, and I'm going, oh, maybe I'm consumed by fear here. Maybe I'd inventory it. So all by my itty-bitty self, before they started the sermon, I wrote down 18 things about losing half my foot that I was afraid of. And my world was real small. And I said, well, you can concentrate on the answer or the problem. And I turned right around, and without breaking a sweat, I ripped off 47 gratefuls. And I'm back in the moment. This is one aspect of my foot. So 2 days later, I had to go see the shoulder surgeon who was going to give me some definitive direction on what to do with the foot. And Monday night, I'm sitting there going, okay, God, I'm going to allow this, whatever the directive is of the shoulder surgeon, to be as the direction of the foot. I'm going to make him a reflection of you, my higher power. And what he says goes. And I thought I had it all figured out. Well, I'll be able to do this because I'm trying to get it cut off in time so I can get here. Okay, I'm trying to work backwards from the last weekend. And anyhow. So I asked him, I said, Doc, what would be the optimum time? And he goes, oh, 3 months. I mean, I was grinding myself into the ground. 3 months was not one of the options because I was trying to figure it out. I was making myself insane. And as he talked, the clarity became just, because I'd offered this covenant to God. What he says goes. And all of that angst, all of that fear, and all of a sudden, you know, on a clear day you can see forever, all of a sudden my world got real big. And I realized that my shoulder is salvageable, my foot's not. Very practical thought, so maybe we'll let that be a priority. But in that, I got back to a point of sanity. And my second step prayer today is, God, I don't have the answers for my life. Will you show me where to find them? Thank you.
Hi, my name is Kat, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Women in Recovery group, which meets on Mondays in Boulder, Colorado. This has been a great workshop. Even though it's really, really warm in here, I wanted to hear people express how they came to believe. And with having reached 8 years, I still hadn't felt it. I felt nothing inside. Like Chorus Line, I felt nothing. And I was a cradle Catholic, So I went 12 years of school, 12 years of study, religious study, and questioned it at about 10th grade, some of the precepts and concepts, and then just kind of stepped away, fell off a precipice, and started drinking, and that didn't fit well with religion, so I was off to the races, and I was able to take care of my own life. Thank you very much. I didn't need any help from God or anyone or any human person. And by the time I got into Alcoholics Anonymous, I had, you know, I was 52. I had step one down. I was done, completely done. Didn't have to convince me. And I went in there to save my life because I knew I only had a few years left if I continued on that path. And I used the group. I used the doorknob. And I used the group again. I tried to find God. I really struggled with it a lot. And then I let it go. I thought, well, I've got X amount of years. And then finally, I realized that I had to really work on it, because I started being a sponsor, and I had sponsees who had faith, you know. They had so much, I don't want to say easier, but if you have faith, it kind of can catapult you after step one into two and three. It helps to know that you have a higher power there with you. And so I became jealous of them and started going to a group that was reading the book Came to Believe, and decided, well, I tell other people, get a God box when something's going on. And I thought, well, gee, I don't have one. And I started putting, you know, my problems in the God box. And I started to realize that they didn't feel so heavy. They kind of resolved on their own. And I'm like, whoa, there's something here. So by a combination of that and being around people who have faith, who have had miracles happen in their life, you know, I came to believe for myself that I have a presence all around me, all the time, helping me to take the next right step in my life. And it's just amazing how much happier I am. And it, you know, took me a long time to get there. So I would just encourage anybody who's struggling with this to look around and listen to the stories other people have to share with you, and to fake it till you make it. And I think it will happen for you. It did for me after 10 years. Thanks.
Hi, Marianne, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, I'm really grateful to be here. I just love Alcoholics Anonymous, and to be here is such a gift from God. I just can't say enough good things about this conference. I came here for my first conference last year, and I hope to make it a yearly event. I love step two. When I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I was dying from active alcoholism. I was dying. You know, I was done. I had no place to go. I had no idea what I was going to do with my life. And one of the first things I heard all these things, but, you know, get a home group, you know, start praying, many things. But the thing that stood out the most to me was get a sponsor. And so I did. And within my first 2 weeks, I had a sponsor, and she said, my job is to take you through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous so you can go through the 12 steps. And she said, we're going to meet once a week, and we're going to start reading this together. And that's what we did, and I had no idea. I had never been in Alcoholics Anonymous before. I had no idea what to expect. And so we started meeting, and we started reading. And when we got to step two, we would talk about each step, and we would read a little and talk a little and read a little and talk a little. And when we got to step two, we were talking about this idea of insanity. And she explained to me that the insanity of the alcoholic is the delusion that somehow, someday, I will be able to control and enjoy my drinking. And that delusion has to be smashed. And that after knowing my first step, where I gave many examples of how I was powerless over alcohol, and you know, how I would pick up the drink, and then the drink would take me, and then I'd be gone, and I could not stop. You know, after all of these examples of powerlessness, to think that I would be able to drink in safety was insanity, and that was the insanity of step two. And she said that, you know, I'm going to have something come between me and the drink, and it needs to be a power greater than myself. And, you know, we talked about what that would look like, and, you know, can I do that? Can I get a power greater than myself? And I came here, like other people said, too, I was kind of like a blank slate, and I said, yeah, you know, I'm willing to try that. And I heard today also that I had that gift of desperation, that, and I didn't know what that was. I was just terrified. That's all I knew. And so she said, you know, when you get this higher power, you're going to need it, because there's going to be a day when you won't be able to go to a meeting. You know, you won't find a meeting within your, you know, vicinity. You're not going to be able to get somebody on the phone. There's going to be a time that you're going to want to drink. And, you know, you need that power to come between you and that drink. And, you know, I'm just so absolutely grateful, because I didn't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous. And to get this sponsor that knew the deal and was able to teach it to me, because, you know, I had a really solid foundation right out of the chutes, not knowing anything. And so I continued to go through the steps with her, and you know, I moved a lot around in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I had different sponsors, and each time we went through the steps again to get to know each other better. And about 8 years later, I was living in Sarasota, Florida, and I went on a vacation, a weekend up in New York City. And in Sarasota, Florida, I was really busy in AA. I had, you know, sponsorship and service, and I had a full-time job that I loved, and life was really full, you know. It was great. And I went to New York City on this vacation for the weekend, and I was feeling a little off, and I was all alone, and I went. It was late at night, and I don't know, I had this restless, irritable, discontent feeling, And I was, you know, in it with my sponsor. You know, I've seen people do everything right in Alcoholics Anonymous, and they get drunk. And I've seen people do everything wrong, and they stay sober. So who knows what it was. But that night, I went out walking the streets of New York, and I felt the urge to drink. And I didn't know where I was. I had gotten off a train somewhere way far away from my hotel, and I was walking back to my hotel, and I kept seeing the people drinking in the bars, you know, and that kind of the hotel Bill Wilson scene where they looked like they were having, you know, fun, and I wanted that. I had that, you know, loneliness, and I started to pray. And I didn't know where I was, as I said, and I was just walking. I remember it was raining, and I just kept saying, God, please keep me sober. God, please keep me sober. I was terrified I was going to drink. And I'm walking, and I'm praying. And suddenly, for some reason, I just stopped, and I looked up, and there on a door was a circle and a triangle. And it's 9:30 at night, so I'm thinking, yeah, right, you know, what's that going to do me? You know, at first I was like, oh, thank God, and then I'm like, oh, you know. And suddenly this man comes over, and he goes, you got to ring the buzzer. Bzz, come on in, you know. And so we went upstairs, and there was a meeting at 9:30 at night. It was a rainbow meeting. It was the best meeting I ever had. And I said, I have 8 years sober. I don't know what's going on, but I think I want to drink. And, you know, that night God came between me and the drink, and that's the insanity of the second step for me. Thanks.
Thank you to our leaders as well as the sharers. Thank you very much. We'll now close the meeting. By group conscience, the Fellowship of the Spirit Conference does not close each meeting with the Lord's Prayer. Instead, we encourage the entire conference to be treated with an attitude of continuous prayer, and we will then say the Lord's Prayer together at the close of the conference on Sunday. Please help me close this meeting by joining hands for a moment of silence. Let us share our spiritual experience and strength with each other so that we may grow together in a greater understanding and love. Thank you.